Hey, thank you everybody for tuning in to this week's episode of Nevada Backcountry. We've got a special guest in the studio today. First, I wanted to bring up, I try to keep politics out of the show as much as possible, when possible. I wanted to bring up what's currently going on in the school system today. I understand the reluctance to get out and partake in the political system sometimes. I've got a family member in North Idaho who doesn't even vote, thinks the entire system's rigged. But this stuff trickles down and does affect us as sportsmen and sportswomen in the country. So currently, as of June of 2023, the Department of Education is withholding funding from schools that offer an archery or a shooting sports program. And how that got passed was last year when they passed the Safer Schools Act. They snuck in there a chapter or a paragraph on shooting sports in our schools currently. So for those of you out there that don't vote or don't get politically involved, it lands at our doorstep one way or the other. Make your voices heard, go out, vote for people that support our way of life. And that's all I got for that. Now, special guest in the studio, Sean Shea. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What's the name of your guiding outfit?
It's the Headmaster.
The Headmaster. A little bit about your background. You're kind of unique in the guiding space in that you were a research biologist?
Yeah. So I was born and raised here in Reno. Went to UNR. I graduated within a couple months. I was hired on by, back then, it was Fish and Wildlife Service. And then they when Clinton came in, they moved all the research to the Biological Resource Division, USGS.
Okay.
So I spent the rest of my career in the USGS working on threatened and endangered fish species all over the West Coast.
Are you retired from them now?
I have been for 7 or 8 years now. I got in early.
I would say.
Yeah.
Post-biology stuff, now you full-time guide?
I full-time guide and do taxidermy and have been, I think I'm full-time master guide for almost 30 years now in the state of Nevada. So it's been a long time.
What constitutes a master guide versus just your everyday guide?
A master guide is pretty much like other states have outfitters and then they have guides that work for the outfitter. That's kind of how it is in Nevada. It's just called a master guide way back when they started with that.
Okay.
And then to become a master guide now, you have to, I can't remember, you got to work a certain amount of years and then get a certain amount of referrals from past clients. And then, you know, then you got to meet all your requirements for insurance and everything else.
And are there like classes you have to take as a outfitter or a guide or a master guide? Kind of like, I don't know, like school teachers, you have to keep recertifying or keeping yourself, I don't know, your license current?
No, you don't. I got, when I became a master guide, I saw that coming down the line. So I just jumped into being a master guide because I figured, it's the same thing as being a guide, but now I can do whatever. So I got in before they put that stipulation you had to work for a master guide for a certain amount of years.
Okay. So as a master guide, as a guide or an outfitter, you really can't have other guide or outfitters working underneath you, but a master guide, you can. So you're kind of like the person in charge, and then you have individuals that work underneath you, kind of like apprentices?
Correct. Now, okay. That's where you got your master guide, and then you got sub-guides.
Oh, okay.
And so sub-guides can be anybody. They actually have to take a class now, which is, I say a class, it's just a common sense thing, which is good, you know?
Yeah.
So anybody can become a sub guide. So, but like I said, it's basically an outfitter and guides. That's all it is. It's just a different terminology.
How many guys you got working under you, or are you a one man show?
Yeah, usually I'm just a one man show.
Like, okay.
I'm small outfit and just keep it personal and I don't book the back end. So if people want to stay a couple extra days, let's keep hunting.
Okay. Where are you based out of?
Reno.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what do you like to see as far as client preparation? Without giving too many exact accounts of stuff you've seen over the years, I don't want anybody listening to get sore about something Sean says, but what have you seen over the years as far as like, hey, this is going to be perfect. This guy's prepared. He knows what he's doing versus, this is going to be a rough go of things.
You know, the preparation, I guess, is, I'll be honest, guys think they can shoot better than they can.
Oh, yeah.
That's the biggest thing I have. Now, when women come on, that's a different story. They are deadly. I would hate to piss off a woman hunter because if that gun comes on you, you're done. It's no testosterone. There's none of that stuff.
There's no hubris or anything involved.
You are in trouble. So that's my biggest thing is guys don't. I always ask them, now, you're a good shot. You're good. Have you ever shot off of not on a bench?
Right.
And they go, no, I do all my shooting off a bench. And I'm like, well, there's no benches out in the hills. So, and I'm sure most guys see that is, and everybody thinks they can shoot long range now. And that's, I hate that. I'm an archery hunter to the core.
Woo-hoo.
I always think that, okay, we're 100 yards. We can get closer than that. And that's how I'm always at. And guys are like, I can make that shot. I can make that shot. I'm like,
now, is it the same for the archery world? Females tend to outperform males. Have you had many female bow hunters?
No, I haven't had very many female bow hunters. I would imagine.
Probably the same. Yeah.
If they prep, they're deadly. They are deadly.
We did an episode on shooting. Went into a little bit of long range stuff, but I told Dave, there's not that ego thing. They just listen. You say, hey, do this. Here's how your body position should be. Exhale this, that, and the other thing. And they do it. Versus a guy that's like, yeah, I grew up shooting my dad's 30-30. I know. It's like, all right.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, even in the archery, when we have the kids come in, the ladies, the girls and the ladies are so much easier to instruct. Because they absorb it. And the thing is, they really listen.
So this is pretty funny. So this lady I had up in Oregon, when I guided up in Oregon for sheep a couple years, she was an older lady. It was her first tag she's ever drawn. She draws the first year. She draws a California bighorn in Oregon.
Oh, my God.
So, her husband calls me and says, oh, yeah. So we get it all set up. And we get up there. I find this just gorgeous. Like he's like a 13-year-old ram, and we find him I find him the day before the season. The next morning, we get up. I'm trying to locate him. I can't find him, and all the sheep have disappeared. So we go, man, something. There must have been a lion or something cruised through there. So we end up finding the rams later that day. So we're stalking down, and like I said, this is the lady's first, and she's got to be late 60s at this point.
Oh, you weren't kidding. Older? Oh,
no,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
But just. She's just a fireball, though, she's just super cool. So we get down, we're making a stalk on these rams, and her husband is with us. We're going down. We're probably, 500 yards away now. And I'm like, okay, we can get down. We can make it to this rock pile. I think we'll be good, So he goes, well, we'll do that. I go, no. I said, her and I said, you're not coming with us. You can sit here and watch. Because I could tell the whole way down, he's like, are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? So he's just prodding her. And I'm like, okay, this is what I got to do. So he was irate. So I just put him in the spot and scope. I said, just sit here and watch. We sneaked down there, and man, her demeanor just changed. She just became calm, cool, and collective. We get in there. We get to this rock pile. These things are probably 200, 220 yards off the top of my head. And they're laying down. And I get her set up. And I said, just wait. I mean, they don't even know we're here. Just wait. And all of a sudden, they finally stood up, and I go, can you see the ram we're talking about? And she goes, yeah. And man, all of a sudden, I could see that barrel just start to swirl. And I'm like, just calm down. It's just a paper target. That's just my picture. And then that barrel just went, doom, just dead stop. And I was like, oh, that thing's dead. Boom. And it was just one shot. Boom. She knocked it over. And she looked at me. She goes, man, if my husband was here, he'd just be like, man, you got to get comfortable. You got to do this. It was so much more comfortable. And I said, no, that's how it should be. And like I said, once that barrel stopped, it was like, I knew, oh man, that thing's done. Boom. And it was done.
So that's awesome.
Yeah.
So what year was that?
Man, that's got to be.
You got to remember, he's got to go 15. Through 30 years.
Oh, yeah. Man, it's got to be.
His Rolodex is slow.
It's slowing down too. 12 or 15 years or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's go ahead and recap on some advice to people going on their first hunt with a guide. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you.
Thanks to our show sponsor, Truck Envy, and welcome back to the show. Hey, make sure you're as prepared as possible before heading into the backcountry. Go see the guys at Truck Envy and get your rig outfitted. Now, where we left off, Sean, we were just talking about some of the shooting stuff with clients thinking they're more prepared than they actually are. You would say put the emphasis into shooting in unsupported positions or shooting at an angle, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing I think guys need to do, because I mean some guides actually will carry, they'll have multiple guides there and they'll carry stuff up where you can do like a bench and they're shooting across canyon. I don't do that.
Right.
I mean, we're there for the hunt, and that's what I tell these guys or women. You know, it's hunting. You know, it's not shooting. It's just we'll get in here and we're going to look for what you're looking for. If we don't see it, don't pull the trigger. I mean, it's that simple.
Yeah. Right. So on that note that, you know, she went out opening day, takes care of her animal, bing, bang, boom, you're done, right? Do you ever get clients that, like your fee, whatever it might be, $1 to hunt an animal, when they are done after day one compared to, say, day 10, are they like, hey, do I get some cash back since it was only took a day?
That's
or
a good question.
Is there like a flat fee? Like no matter what, you have me from 1 day to 10 days. This is your window. And whatever happens in that window, if you shoot it on day one, it's still the same fee as if you last until day 10 and go home with something or nothing.
It is a set fee because they book you for that time period.
Right. Okay.
Because at that point, I mean, you can't book somebody else. Because you're already into that season, and so
it's already checked off.
Exactly.
I don't know anybody that would complain though if they go out get the animal they want on the opening day. I don't know anybody that would be.
Well, you never know. There might you never know, but it's just a curiosity question. And then like cancellations, how does that work? You know, somebody gets a hold of you 3 days or 4 days, or is there like a policy like after this date, kind of like some of our archery shoots? Once you pass this date, whatever you paid for your fees for that archery shoot are ours. Is there anything like that?
The way I do it, I mean, I'm sure other guides do it differently, is I have a deposit. They have to put a deposit down to book that time frame.
Okay.
If they, you know, something happens, like you said, 3 days before they cancel for some reason, they don't get the deposit back. But I don't make them prepay the back end of that, the other part of the deposit, beforehand, which some guides do.
Oh, okay.
Because people aren't made of money, you know, especially a lot of these people. So that's the way I look at it is, I mean, there could have been something that caused it, you know?
Yeah,
so
right.
I'm not going to hold them to that. It's just they had to put this deposit down to book that time frame.
Okay.
Have you ever hunted with a guide, Dave?
I hunted with Sean a bunch of years ago for Pig, but
okay,
he wasn't a hired guide. He was we all went as a big group and shot pigs. That's the only time I think I've been with a guide.
Yeah, I've never used a guide in Nevada. Yeah. I have, obviously, going out of the country. Your hands are kind of tied there. I've done that before. But as far as in Nevada, I never hunted with a guide before.
No.
I hunted with a guide in Alaska a couple of years ago, but that's because you had to. I had a doll sheep that I'd booked many years before, and I finally came up. And it was kind of funny. He was a younger guy, and you know, I'd probably been on, probably 60 more sheep hunts than he has been at that point. And he goes, honestly, the only reason I'm here, as he's talking about himself, is to make this legal.
Yeah,
so
right.
He just kind of sat back and let me do what I was going to do.
Yeah.
So, I think it's only caribou and moose left, right, in Alaska.
And black bear.
Oh, black bear and deer. Okay. Yeah, that you don't have to have a guide up there.
So what are some questions that you get when people call, like, I would think you as a guide, you've been in Nevada your whole life. You've been a master guide for 30 years. You've been in every nook and cranny of this state looking at any of the huntable game species we have on our list. That knowledge has value. Are there folks that just call you and say, hey, I've never hunted this area. I don't have a ton of money to hire you as a guide, but I mean, do you guys charge fees to like just provide people with information? Like, hey, $200 and I'll give you a ton of information on the area you're looking to hunt since, you know, you're not going to hire me, but you want to know where to go.
You know, I've done that once, and it was for an antelope hunter. he was a non-resident, and I'll be honest with you, for the most part, I don't take resident deer hunters because I have been screwed left and right with them bringing their buddy in that draws a tag 2 years later into a little area that I show them, and I'm there, and all of a sudden they come walking into the place I'm
and they're
glassing.
Like, hey, Sean, what's up?
And I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah, okay. So I would have never thought of that.
So honestly, I take very, very few resident deer hunters.
That makes sense, yeah.
A couple of them I do take because they're ancient, so they'll probably forget where I took them by the next year.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah.
Guys like my generation, yeah, sitting there with Onyx open you're taking their buddy. Yeah.
They're just hitting waypoints. So, you know, but for sheep and antelope and stuff, since those tags are a lot harder to draw.
Right.
I'll take, you know, resin.
You did do that at some point. You gave somebody information. You charged them for
it? I did.
Okay.
I went out and scouted and beforehand and gave them places to go look.
Where
I'd seen antelope. And it was just for an antelope hunt. Yeah. And I think it worked out pretty good for him. I mean, going in blind to a unit that's, well, it's five units together, so it was huge.
Yeah. And that's one thing with Nevada. Our hunt units, some of them are just absolute. I mean, look at Area 16. It's a third of the state.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going from Eureka to almost Fallon or Midas.
Yeah.
That is.
Top part.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah. All the way down
Austin
to Tonopah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, you know, you're like, I wonder where I can find deer.
I can see that being pretty intimidating coming, especially from people like back east, coming out here and going, wait a second, like I got three mountain ranges. I can, where do I start?
Yes, yeah, exactly. You know, you go back to the Midwest and hunt whitetail deer, you're on like a 100-acre lot.
Yeah.
You know, and here you're like, hey, what's my area? It's about 1.3 million acres. You're like, oh.
You got Rhode Island to hunt, buddy.
Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah. Now, another question. So when you do have a client that, say, hypothetically, they're deer hunting, and they want, you know, they're like, hey, man, I really want a 170 plus, and generally you probably know the area already, but what would happen if, you know, you're in there 3 or 4 days, you're not seeing jack squat. Do you generally have like a plan B set up in your head so that you're not wasting another 3 days staring at fork and horns?
Yeah. So I've got, most of my deer hunts are 5 days. So I got a plan A, B, C, D, and E.
Oh, a plan for each. Oh, okay.
And F.
Gotcha.
And I mean, we go in, we're hunting. And like I said, I hunt hard. I mean, we leave. We're into, we want a glass before daylight, and we're not hitting back to camp until after dark. So, I mean, I don't go back to lunch or any of that stuff. So be prepared to hunt, because that's, you know, you're not going to see it middle of the day if you're not out there in the middle of the day.
Right.
And
in your brain, you've already got you've already got set plans multiple. Okay.
Yeah.
I got one out of left field, but I took my daughter back east to Ohio for a deer hunt. She's not old enough to put in Nevada. It was the weirdest thing to me. I got like a hit list, like laminated of pictures of, you know, this is so-and-so. He comes in, you know, and here's where you're going to be hunting. And do you have something like that? Like if a non-resident hits you up, says, hey, I drew this tag for deer or whatever. Do you have like a hit list of pictures of deer that you know, like, hey, I want this deer or, you know?
You know, I guess I'm kind of old school. I'm not one of the ones that take pictures.
Okay.
I've got the picture in my head
right,
of where I saw him, and that's, we're going to go look for him. And I'll tell him up front, I saw this big deer. This is, we're going to go looking. We can spend a couple days in here, and because he's going to be in here somewhere, because there's no roads. I mean, if there's, because no one walks off a road anymore, which is kind of funny to me. But so, yeah, it's not really a hit list, but it's like, okay, I know this buck is in here. I saw him.
Right.
Okay.
It was a weird experience, man. They were all named. I got a picture, where they think they're bedding, all this stuff. And I'm looking at this like, man. But then again, that's also whitetails. People get to know those things much better.
Oh, yeah.
You know, out here, it's like you might see a 180 class deer one season and never see them again.
Absolutely.
So just different species and stuff. But anyway.
Yeah. So guides have different ways of doing their business, but. So when you book somebody for your 5-day deer hunt, you don't have like trophy fees. Like if they shoot a 190, 200 class muley, you're not, okay, dude, that's another X amount of dollars. Where some guides, like Henry was saying with the hit lists, that whitetail on your property, like, okay, his trophy fees.
Yeah, I've never charged a trophy fee. Okay. This is for your 5-day hunt. I mean, if we see a 200-inch typical the first day, I hope you're going to shoot it.
Hey, Sean, hold that thought. Let's go to a quick break. Everybody stay tuned to 99.1 and Lyon County's 92.3 FM Talk. Thanks for hanging in there over the break. Let's dive right back in where we left off.
You know, I always tell guys when they show up, I'm always looking for, and I don't say score because a lot of people over-exaggerate score. I mean, really do.
Yeah.
I hate that. I go, what I'm always looking for is a buck that's a 27-inch, nice 4-point, but I like mass.
Yeah.
And I tell guys, I mean, that's what we're going to look for. I mean, if we don't see it, I don't want you to shoot something that you don't want to shoot. So let's just, I mean, you got 5 days. Let's enjoy it. Let's hunt it. I've killed those bucks or sheep or whatever the last half hour of the last day. So you just don't know when it's going to be.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, well, enjoy it.
Yeah. And that's got to be comforting too, also for, you know, somebody who's on a limited financial plan to know that their guide's not going to gouge them when they do happen to shoot a smoking non-typical or just a big old buck and then find out there's a trophy fee and you're like, oh
yeah, I've never liked that concept. Yeah.
That's a big back east, a big Africa thing. Yes. They do it like a kudu up to certain point, you know.
Midwest, the whitetail stuff, those high fence ranches and stuff, it's like, oh yeah, that's Big Smoky, he's a 235 whitetail non-typical, he's X amount of dollars, and you're like,
he likes long walks on the beach.
Yeah, and right now he's feeding out of the bucket on tree number 7, you know, that type of a thing. But, yeah, so I was just kind of curious because there's so many variations of that.
You know, and I'm sure there's guides that do that in Nevada.
Yeah.
I don't. I just have never, you know, you got a set price, and that's what I always believed is I'm going to work hard for you those 5 days or whatever it is, whatever species or whatever it is, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like you said, you're just a solid old school type of, you know, not just a guy, but you're a hardcore hunter yourself. You know, you're out there yourself doing battling the elements to try to tackle your animal.
Did you draw this year?
I did. I drew an archery antelope, an archery deer, and an archery bull elk. But I gave the antelope tag back just because I've got, there's so much water where I drew this year. And there's only like 3 or 4 tags in there, but there's like so much water in there that you can't
The deer and the elk, you're gonna what's your favorite species to hunt?
Boy,
for you personally,
for me personally,
yeah,
I probably got 2. I love big mule deer. I mean, I don't care who tells you whitetail or they can say or blacktail, a true big monster muley these days is probably, I mean, is on the top list as a top end blacktail or top end whitetail. I mean, they're just probably the toughest thing around.
Now, what you said too.
I love hunting mountain lions.
Oh,
I've been doing that forever. I don't take a lot of customers because that's one of my things where I said guys think they're in better shape than they are.
Yeah.
That's where you find out that you're not in as good a shape as you think you are.
Yep.
And it just turns into trouble.
Yeah.
Trouble, yeah.
So
that season I spent with that, we were talking about a mutual friend. Yeah, that's, I equate it to basically high-speed chucker hunting. It's chucker hunting while jogging. I remember looking, you know, nowadays I'm part of that generation, but looking at the data and my watch and everything afterwards, I was like, whoa, man, we covered some ground. Yeah. That was work.
Yeah, and they're not on trails.
Yeah.
Okay, so mountain lions and mule deer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about for guiding? What are your favorite species to guide for?
I still love big mule deer.
Big mule deer, okay.
I'm probably one of the ones that, I'll be honest with you, I think sheep are overrated. on hunting. I know. Hey, a lot of people are going to be yawning at me right now, but I do. I mean, they're majestic, don't get me wrong, but I think they're overrated. I mean, they're a lot easier to hunt than a big mule deer. They're easier to find, and they're just not as, I don't find them as weary. I mean, they can be, but they can just wander around. But for the most part, I mean, I've been on a lot of sheep hunts. I've been, I think almost over 90 now.
Okay.
And so I just think those big mealies are, I mean, they're as tough as you can get.
Yeah. I've talked about this before. I liked, that was my first experience sheep hunting when my dad drew that tag. And I liked it because of the opportunities.
Yes.
And whereas, like you were saying, with mule deer, man, you might only get one opportunity to screw it up, especially with a bow and arrow.
Yep.
You might only get one chance to screw that thing up and you're hosed. There's your, that's it. You're eating tag soup. So yeah. I like the aspect of sheep hunting of, yeah, okay, hey, we blew that one or whatever. We bumped them. Like, all right, hey, sit back down, glass, you find another band of them, whatever. Like, all right, let's go after those. I kind of like that aspect of sheep hunting.
Yeah, that is nice. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's fun, but I think big mule deer are the toughest thing out there. I mean, just because of what, you know, what they got to deal with. I mean, they turn nocturnal and they're like one of the, they're tough.
Yeah.
You know, you got to turn them up in their beds. That's tough.
Yeah. They're a lot of fun. What is, in your opinion, what is the best unit in the state for muleys right now?
Man.
First muleys, second elk. It's a tough one.
It is a tough one because I think there's good mule deer in every unit.
Yes.
You just got to put the time and effort to find them. Yeah. And the big thing is how I tell guys is you got to be willing to pass those ones that you're like, man, I don't know, maybe I should shoot him to get to the next stage. And a lot of guys can't do that, which
that's
is fine.
You're looking, looking at one right now.
I just have the hardest. I have tried so many times to do that. Like, you know, I'll see an average, nice 3-point or something. I'm like, I don't know, man. He's right there.
Yeah.
He's in my zone. Do I let him walk? And then do I just keep going and look for the bigger boys that we saw when we were scouting? And it's always no. It's always no.
Something happens. I black out and it's like, oh, okay. Well, I got a deer. Sweet.
the guy I deer hunt with a lot, he's that. I mean, if we go out, if I get a stalk in the whole week because I'm looking, there's times that he's never seen me stalk in a whole year because I'm like, nah, go for it. Go for it. So he gets all these stalks on and I'll just sit back, you know, and hand signal him in or whatever. And I'm just picky, I guess it is.
Yeah.
You know, I've been there. I've shot some good deer over the year.
What's your best deer?
That's
no, 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 no. Yeah, okay, so there's best hunt.
No, that's a tricky question. So,
and then best deer.
If you're talking to guys that are over 70, 30-inch buck is their best deer. That's
right.
What we're looking for. They don't care what the score is, as long as it's 30-inch buck. It could be the size of a pencil.
Yeah.
As long as it's 30. Yeah.
So you talking score, you talking width, you talking what?
Let's go score first.
I have a couple deer, non-typicals.
Right, right.
So just gross score that are 220 to 230.
Oh.
That's a big deer.
Yeah.
Now, width, what's your widest deer?
Just about 41 inches.
Whoa.
That's probably a non-typical.
No.
That was a
He's a 4x3.
Oh, geez, old Murphy.
And he's got like 30-inch main beams and just a big desert buck is what he was.
Wow.
Just out living on the sagebrush off flats.
Did he come out flat off the head or something? Like,
no,
how do you get to 41 inches?
He's just a big desert
just
buck,
huge. You know, man.
Never living in the trees. A
little bit of mass or not much?
No, he's average mass. You know, average mass.
Yeah, because my biggest deer is like what you were saying, that there's no mass on him. We nicknamed him when we spotted him.
Sticks.
We nicknamed him Sticks.
Yeah.
Because he literally just looks like, you know, he's just, there's no mass on him. He's just tiny.
Yeah.
But he's wide and his forks are long. That's where his growth was.
But if you're in a score, that's the name of the game.
Yeah.
Forks.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Spread doesn't do you.
Yeah.
Squat.
If I find a fork and horn 3-point that's got some weird antler sticking out sideways or just something that you're
going
like,
down.
I'll never see that again. I mean, just something totally weird, you know, like circus animal.
Yeah.
It's done. Or at least I'm going to try to. I'm just because they're so cool.
Yeah. One of my biggest, I've never shot, and this is going to sound weird, I've always wanted to shoot a 28 inch forked horn. I love huge old forked horns that just got the mass.
They're the coolest.
Oh, they're just, I mean, their forks are just,
yeah.
You know that when they fight during the rut, that other deer's getting hurt just because of that big fork.
Oh, yeah.
And
18-inch forks on them or something.
Yeah, I just love those. And that's for me. I mean, guys, I know guys that won't. I've had a lot of clients that won't even shoot a 3-point.
Really?
And I'm like, man, that thing's like 31, 32. But they're like, man, it's only 3-point. I'm like, okay, that's your decision. Let's go on and look. And then the end of the year, like, or the end of this, they're like, man, do you think we can go back and find that 3-point? Now I'm thinking about it. I should have probably shot him. I said, well, we could, but I don't think so. Let's go look somewhere else. I mean, you already passed him once.
Yeah.
No, I'm not a guy that kills big deer, so I'm not a – I don't get hung up on stuff. Like I told – I mean, I'm just kind of like, okay, if I can get within range, I'm going to send an arrow. But I do admire those people that consistently, year after year, put big deer in the dirt. And I don't know what that – whatever that is, I don't have it because I like to eat them.
I don't own that ability at all.
I don't know what that is. So I think it's you know, those guys, whether it's a score thing or a wit thing or whatever, that selectivity, I think that's cool that people can get to that point. Someday maybe I'll get there. Final segment to the show coming up. Real quick, I wanted to mention the Howa Superlight Rifles by Legacy Sports International. These things are absolutely incredible. The perfect mountain hunting rifle. You owe it to yourself before your rifle tag comes around. Go check them out. Legacy Sports International, the Howa Superlight Rifle.
You know, I still enjoy that. I really do. Just getting out there. And my biggest thing, more and more, this is going to sound weird. I don't like back patters. They just pat themselves on the back. Oh, I shot this. Yeah. I shot this. Yeah, I shot this. I'm like, you know, I don't really give a rat's what you shot. You probably paid for it. You probably paid a fortune to shoot that deer or that elk or that sheep. Which is fine, you know, that's what you want to do. But
yeah, cue Jimmy John.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and some others. Yeah. And some others. But you know, I'm kind of, the more and more every year, I just can't stand to talk to back patters.
Yeah, half the time I don't remember the animals I've shot, but I do remember the stalk, the spotting, the entire experience of it. That's what gets me going is this, the absolute experience of like one of my hardest animals I ever shot in my life was a forked horn.
Yeah.
I mean, the stalk was insane. I mean, he was on high alert, and it was just this tedious, tedious stalk to get within range of him, and he was better with a couple other deer. It's just
You've said before awesome. You'll pick an animal based on the difficulty of the stalk.
Oh, yeah, completely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. Oh, yeah. If it's like, that's going to be a tough animal to get to. And he, I don't care how big he is. I'm like, that's going to be tough.
Yeah.
And I'm like, let's see if we can do it. And then I go for it.
Oh, I'm with you on that. I mean, I love the stalk. I mean, I'll just put stalks on just a stalk, you know. I know I'm not going to shoot it, but I just want to get in there and see if I can do it. And, you know, and that's one of the other things that I've always found is guys always think, oh, man, the wind's a little bit wrong. I'm not going to do it today. I'm like, you might not ever see that thing again. I'm going to figure out how to get in there.
There are options.
There's
always an option.
You got to make your own moves. You know when to go slow and know when to pick it up.
Yeah.
Is when it is. And that's all it is.
So when you've got clients calling you, like, what are some of the most common questions they ask when they're talking about their booking you as a guide for their hunts?
Probably the first thing they always ask, and I guess it depends on where they're from. If they're from back east, I notice a lot of them say, what's your success rate?
Yeah. What's your success? Yeah.
And I'll just tell them, you know, it really depends on the hunter. I mean, as much effort you want to put in. And if you feel like shooting that deer or not, I can't really go off of success. I just tell them if I'm just a low key, pretty much all my hunts are one-on-one. I don't take any two-on-one unless it's a father and son or two buddies draw a tag and that's how they want to hunt is two guy or two hunters on one guy.
Yeah.
But most of my stuff is just one-on-one.
Success rate. What about guys from the West?
There's a lot of guys that want to know what's out there.
Like size-wise?
And, yeah. Oh, okay.
What do you see in your score-wise? Do you think we can find a 190 class buck? And usually those people all go, you know what? If you're stuck on that, you should probably call somebody else. I mean, because we might find one. We might not, but
right.
we're gonna try. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, do you ever guarantee people, like, I'll get you in to have an opportunity. It's up to you if you actually want to take it.
Yeah, there's always opportunities.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
It just depends on what that person is looking for, which is fine. I mean, I don't care. If they want to shoot something that's clicks it for them, that's fine. I mean, but I don't have a lot of sub guides. You get guys back on the eastern part of the state, which have a ton of sub guides.
Yeah.
They have all kinds of high school kids that they're paying to go scout for them.
Yeah.
And I just got those guys that book with them. It's I don't know. It's not my thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What about a dream client? When they show up, you're like, this is going to be perfect.
That's us, Henry.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
A dream client. Wow. You know, I've had some really good people over the years. I'll have to admit.
Is it the perseverance thing? Guys that are just willing, or gals that are willing to go the distance?
Yeah, I think, you know, probably my dream client would be a good archery mule deer tag that somebody has, and we're going to go in there, and for me to sit back and watch somebody stalk, I'm like there. I'm just like, oh, my God, you got a shot. Why isn't they taking the shot? I've been there, and it's like, well, obviously they can't see it. From where my angle, I can see that they can.
Yeah, you think they're on top of it.
And it's like, man, no. What are you doing? Come on. And you know, my heart's going through my throat at that point. So
what would you tell people if they're going to go on a hunt with you, or just people in general going out hunting? My two things are always packing boots. That's where I spend the most money. I mean, you could
pack boots and glass.
Pack boots and glass. Yeah. That's the
number one thing is glass.
Your money in glass.
Know, yeah. Cause I mean, your boots and pack, that's kind of a thing. But and guys will say, oh, you know, you got a good spot and scope. I rarely use a spot and scope myself. You have to have a good pair of binoculars. That's just what it is. I mean, you know, I see guys, and not knocking them bad, but Vortex and stuff, they'll come in, oh, I got the new Vortex. I'm like, well, you should have just paid the money and got the Zeiss or the Swarovski or the Leica right off the bat, because you're going to end up selling those later on, losing money. And then, you know, a couple years down the road, you're going to end up buying one of the three top glasses I was talking about. So you're going to spend more money in the long run. You should have just done it right off the bat, and then you'd have had it done. So that you're right. You're right, Dave. I think for me, that's the best thing. And I use I got a regular pair of binos, a 10x42s, and then I use a 20x60 Zeiss.
Oh, the bit. Yeah, okay.
I use a big Zeiss for spotting. It's just, I don't get the eye fatigue. You know, a lot of those guys using that Swarovski, the BTXs, binos thing. But I mean, you need a whole separate backpack to carry those things.
Oh, yeah. They're enormous.
Yeah.
Absolutely enormous.
Yeah.
I will say I'm that guy. I've got the Vortex Razor stuff.
Yeah, and that's why I brought the Vortex. A lot of guys, a lot of people push that, which is fine. I mean, it's good for some guys' eyes. There's just certain binoculars that, like, I can't look through Swarovski. I see a yellow tint in it, and it bothers my eye.
Oh, I was just going to say, on an elk hunt in Montana with my dad, and that is where I noticed that's what you pay three times as much. You know, and I got the top of the line Vortex ones, but still, at last light there, man, you could see stuff through those Swarovskis that you could not with the Vortex.
Yeah. Good binoculars. Yeah. Like you said, Dave, I think is.
Oh, yeah. One. You're behind that more than you are your weapon.
Yeah.
I mean, you're behind your weapon if you know.
If your eyes are tired,
dude, you're done.
You're done for the rest of the day.
So good glass.
Good glass.
Good pack. Good boots.
Yeah.
I'm always interested to pick, especially guides. You guys are out there nonstop, and you get to see a lot of different stuff with clients, you know, versus I kind of have like, okay, I may go through a pair of boots in a year or so and try something new, but I don't get the exposure to like, oh no, I saw these blow up, or I saw that blow up. This works, that doesn't. So I always like picking your guys' brains on that stuff.
I went through about everything. The same thing with packs and everything. And you got to find something that's comfortable for you that's gonna hold up.
Right.
Yeah.
Because if it won't hold up, it's just go to somewhere else. Go to something else. You'll pay more in the long.
Oh, yeah. When you're having to buy four or five pairs of them over a period of time, you're like, well, at $150, $200 a pair, you could have bought yourself a pair of Crispies, or you could have bought yourself you know, something better. Like you were saying with the glass, you know, okay, great. Four pairs of Vortex or Canons or whatever in the heck, Pentaxes or something out there. You could have bought yourself some really nice glass.
Yeah, yeah. And you're just going to save your money. You're going to save some money.
That's what my dad always says, only a rich man can afford cheap merchandise. And I'm like, all right, fair enough.
That's good.
But I'm not at the Swarovski stage of my life yet.
Well, your third set of Vortex, you'll be thinking, I should have done that.
As soon as these go, I probably will make the leap. But again, I told you about four kids. Those suckers are spending, man.
I was going to bring that up, going, well, you know what? Four pairs of binoculars, four kids, I can understand that.
Those are tough kids, though, man. And that couple of those shoots we've been on, the 3D shoots we've taken them they've actually done better than us.
Yeah, they're troopers.
In the sense of not complaining about X, Y, or Z. I mean, keep going.
I can't wait till they get old enough to tell some stories. I hear stuff come out of my mouth sometimes, and I'm like, that was like former infantry NCO you. That's not how you talk to a six-year-old, dude. What is wrong with you?
Yeah. Well, your boy's like a dirt magnet.
Yeah.
I mean, that kid.
Pig pen.
Oh, my God. Anytime I've seen him at the shoots, he comes out of the car clean. You can't even recognize the kid 20 minutes later. It's like he just, like mud finds him.
With that blonde mullet, too. Oh, it's like perfect. Yeah. You look exactly like I think you would, buddy.
Yeah. And he doesn't care. Typical boy.
No. That's good.
He could care less.
Nah, they're good kids, but they cut into my good glass budget for sure, man. For sure.
Yeah, you can always blame them for your eye fatigue. Oh, you did this to me. You did this to me.
How do people get in touch with you?
Go to my email.
Okay.
It's Sean, S-E-A-N, the correct spelling, at theheadmaster.com.
Okay.
You can find my phone number. And
theheadmaster.com is the website?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Hey, Sean, thank you very much for taking the time coming on today. Appreciate having you here.
You bet.
Thanks for joining us this Sunday on Nevada Backcountry. Don't forget Tom Gresham's Gun Talk coming up at 11 on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.